on this edition of the program. Did the new ruling in Florida just turn it blue? And is Joe Biden making a mistake by going after Nikki Haley voters? Michael Cohen joins the program. It's all coming up.
This is made possible by Owe Them Bones, Daily Tech News Show, V, and Craig.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Politics program for April 3rd, 2024. Your old pal Justin Robert Young joining you in Austin, Texas. Well, friends, a moment that we knew would define the campaign is here. The Florida Supreme Court made a series of decisions on abortion Monday, and they both have very far-reaching consequences. Some for the citizens of Florida and others for the political ramifications, not only of that state, but of the nation. Here's the first one. The final legal challenge before Ron DeSantis' 6-week abortion ban could go into effect is now cleared. The ban, with exceptions for rape, incest, and health of the mother, will take effect within 30 days. Second, the court cleared the way for a ballot initiative this November that would enshrine in the state constitution the right to an abortion up to fetal viability. That is a term that is often understood to be anywhere between 17 and 25 weeks. I'm sure we'd have more conversation should that abortion ballot initiative pass in November. Of course, there's an average of a 40-week term to have a baby. This has begun a lot of chatter, not only on the media, but also from many of you that have hit me up on socials. Could the once king of swing states, Florida, regain its crown? Well, Joe Biden coincidentally released an ad this morning targeting abortion-minded voters.
For 54 years, they were trying to get Roe v. Wade terminated, and I did it, and I'm proud to have done it.
In 2016, Donald Trump ran to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, in 2024, he's running to pass a national ban on a woman's right to choose. I'm running to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again, so women have a federal guarantee to the right to choose. Donald Trump doesn't trust women. I do. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Is abortion going to be a major issue? Yes. Could it win Joe Biden re-election? Yes. Will it win Florida? No. And I don't think that the Biden reelect campaign thinks so either, because the ad that you just saw isn't running in Florida. Why? Well, the short version is that Donald Trump is on the ballot there and he's very, very, very popular in Florida. In 2016, he wins the state by 2% over Hillary. In 2018, his endorsee, Ron DeSantis, wins by about 20,000-ish votes. Now, that is very indicative of the stable meta of Florida, in my opinion. A close state, a purple state, but one that, when it really comes down to it, will tilt just ever red. That's what we saw when Rick Scott was governor. That's what we saw with Jeb Bush. Even while every once in a while a president could turn it blue, and maybe a senatorial campaign if you really, really squeeze a lot of juice out of it. In general, it was a 49-51 Republican state. But that was 6 years ago. Since then, here are the numbers. 2020, Trump expands his lead to 3.5 points. In a losing effort for the presidency. In 2022, both Ron DeSantis and Marco Rubio win statewide by over 15%. DeSantis damn near 20. Of course, that gave the old boy enough confidence to run for president, which, whoops, didn't quite work out. But let's say that this ballot initiative just sets the blue counties in Florida aflame. Goodbye to Red Miami Dade, which is what DeSantis had in 2022. No. Now, not only is South Florida very much engaged, but also the I-4 corridor, the other place where Democrats live in Florida, has turned out like never before. You're still putting a lot of faith, even in that scenario, in one of the most incompetent state parties in the nation. The Florida Democrats. There's a lot of blocking and tackling to take advantage of that enthusiasm, something that the state party has proven themselves woefully inept at. That is, unless the national party flies a bunch of people down and holds their hand while they're doing it. So the real question would be, does Biden 2024 believe Florida is actually flippable? Well, we'd have to see some pretty eye-popping polls to make me believe that they believe that that's possible. You'll hear a lot of talk about how Florida is in play, but talking big and spending big are two very different things. And Florida, with three media markets in the top 20 nationally, is very, very expensive to play in, specifically because you need those media markets because they're the places where Democrats vote. On the GOP side, I would say they do need to take this seriously. A loss in Florida, where your presidential candidate lives, and a popular governor kicked off this situation by passing a law that seemed a lot more designed for Des Moines, Iowa, than it did Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You know, remember, initially he signed a 15-week ban. That's more like what Youngkin did in Virginia. A 6-week ban is a little, you know, Alabama-ish for a state that is fairly cosmopolitan. The easiest thing that the Republicans could do? A reunion between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. A lot of bad blood still exists from the primary process, but I don't believe that either can really afford any sort of infighting as we go into this contest. Let me make this extraordinarily clear. Whether or not I believe that Florida will turn blue, this is going to be a very close election. It always is in our modern times. But the potential for embarrassment on the Republican side is particularly high. Let's say for the Republicans, the worst happened. And indeed, Florida goes to the Democrats and Joe Biden. Well, not only could Joe Biden pre-book his stay at the Villages once he leaves the White House, but you would have not only the spiritual base of your power totally obliterated, you would have Ron DeSantis's future totally destroyed. And you would have Donald Trump's home state flip against him. Look, Florida is a red state and the Democrats are bad, but Trump has only won that state by less than 5 points twice. If Biden went whole hog and the GOP doesn't take it seriously, things could get very 2000-esque. We're talking hundreds of votes that would separate a winner and a loser. Now, I don't think that will happen. I think that Biden understands that all that money is going to be better spent elsewhere. And I do think that the GOP is going to close ranks. But I also think that that ballot initiative might pass. If you look at previous ballot initiative, liberal ballot initiatives, there was a medical marijuana one that happened a few years ago. They do turn people out. It's going to have to pass by 60%, which will be a challenge in Florida. But I don't know if Florida Trump voters are particularly pro-lifey. Obviously, there are some, but there's a lot of boat Republicans that probably don't necessarily think a 6-week ban is something that they would like. It's going to be a very interesting situation. And the biggest wild card is how Trump decides to handle abortion going forward. He has kept his powder dry, but he's not going to be able to do it for much longer, especially considering you have Biden running national ads saying that you are going to ban abortion federally. That's not something that I have seen Donald Trump say, but he's going to have a message on it. He won't be able to avoid it. And situations like these are exactly why. This is your update brought to you by TakePoliticsSeriously.com. It's where you support the show. It's where you get two bonus podcasts each and every week on this very program. I just do two more episodes for you. And I'm working, rain or shine. It was Easter on Sunday. Don't matter to me none. Saddled right down in this seat. Covered a bunch of pre-taped Sunday shows that had nothing to talk about because the news has been a little light. We're in a bit of a light part of the calendar. And this is normally where, in a very competitive primary, we're getting to the end. We're getting to the dregs of the primary system. But primaries wrapped up early this year. You know, we barely got past Super Tuesday. So, not a lot to talk about. But no matter what, I'm here. Any news that does break, and the news that breaks, important news, I bring it to you on Monday and on Thursday exclusively at Patreon, where you can get TakePoliticsSeriously.com is where you get to our Patreon, and you get that automatically for $3. You know, price of a cup of coffee. Get two bonus episodes. I think it's a pretty good deal. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged that the accidental death of innocent people in Gaza was due to an Israeli airstrike, specifically affecting seven workers from the World Central Kitchen. These included nationals from Australia, Poland, and the United Kingdom. Netanyahu's statement described the incident as an unfortunate mistake during wartime, promising diligence to prevent future occurrences. World Central Kitchen, a U.S.-based nonprofit known for providing meals in crisis zones, criticized the Israeli Defense Force for striking the convoy despite precautions, including coordination with the IDF and visible branding on their vehicles. Among the casualties were a Palestinian and a dual U.S.-Canadian citizen. The IDF's intensive bombings of Gaza aim at Hamas following significant attacks by Palestinian militants last October, of course. The international community has reacted strongly. Leaders like UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese demanding accountability and describing the loss of life as unacceptable and tragic. The White House expressed deep concern, urging a swift Israeli investigation into the incident. World Central Kitchen has paused its operations in Gaza, where it had been combating severe hunger, delivering over 42 million meals in response to the crisis. This tragic event underscores the broader humanitarian crisis in Gaza, where over 70% of its population faces extreme hunger, as reported by the UN. This is an absolute tragedy, and you can compound it to the loss of human life that has happened in a particularly ugly situation in Gaza. I would recommend that folks go over to friend of the show, Ryan Macbeth's YouTube channel. He did a very good breakdown of how these kinds of situations happen, how they work, what likely went wrong here, and some ways that you can have it be a little bit more assured going forward. His perspective, and it's one that I trust, is that this is not something that is a hair trigger situation. This is something that needed to be agreed at the highest levels. Obviously, they believed, the IDF believed that this convoy, it was three cars, carried something other than food and supplies. But if you look at an already eroding sense of international support, this is not what the IDF would have wanted. So you can't imagine that they did it on purpose. This seems, by all accounts, including the very, very swift official comment from Benjamin Netanyahu, that this is a mistake. But boy, the information war is not on the side of the IDF. Flipping back to domestic matters. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, representing Kentucky, has firmly stated his intention to remain in the Senate until January 2027, dispelling rumors of an early retirement following his announcement that he would step down as party leader. After an 18-year tenure as the longest-serving party leader in Senate history, McConnell expressed his desire to take a different direction. That was a direct quote. He will, however, remain actively involved in Senate affairs. He emphasized his commitment to counteracting the isolationist tendencies within his party, particularly regarding the support of Ukraine, highlighting the issue as a testament to his ongoing engagement in significant national debates. McConnell made this clear in a radio interview with Terry Miners in Louisville, Kentucky, that his departure from the leadership role does not imply a withdrawal from his senatorial duties or the political arena writ large. His announcement in February about completing his seventh term was a reiteration of his dedication to serving the people of Kentucky and fulfilling the responsibilities bestowed upon him by his constituents and colleagues. There is not a media outlet that I believe is more plugged in or favorable to Mitch McConnell than the Ruthless Variety program, a podcast that I am a fan of. And more than that, I would say there's only a handful of podcasts where you can actually get pretty good X's and O's from political professionals. There's not, I mean, there's like three or four that I've found. If you have one, then please let me know. There are few that are particularly listenable or aren't, you know, just biographies of people. So they have said, and a lot of them come out of the McConnell sphere, that Mitch McConnell plans on being both seen and heard as he has stepped out of leadership. That if you thought you know Mitch McConnell, you have not. You have known Mitch McConnell, who has to advance legislation, who has to be a calming voice often, but that apparently behind closed doors, Mitch McConnell has a lot of very pointed opinions, and you are about to see an unleashed cocaine Mitch. Finally, Representative Ruben Gallego has significantly bolstered his Arizona Senate campaign with a notable $7.5 million in the first quarter of 2024, more than doubling his previous quarter's fundraising. That leaves him with $9.6 million cash on hand and 7 months until Election Day. Gallego's financial position appears robust. This, of course, is the first quarter reflecting the fact that Kyrsten Sinema will not seek a second term as an incumbent, therefore taking that from a three-way dance to a mano-a-mano contest between Gallego and Republican Kerry Lake, the former TV anchor and gubernatorial candidate who raised $2.1 million in the last quarter of 2023. I apologize. Kerry Lake's fundraising may increase with support from Republicans who had been hesitant because they might have liked Sinema better. They wanted Sinema in there. Sinema gone. Maybe now Republican money starts flowing to Lake. We will see in the coming months. But Gallego's fundraising success is highlighted by the fact that 98% of the contributions were $200 or less, indicating widespread grassroots support, with 100,000 individuals contributing last cycle, half of whom were first-time donors to his campaign. Here's what I would love. And I don't know if these are part of the FEC declarations. I'll have to text Dave Leventhal. But do we know offhand, do you have to file how many people have donated to you from your home state? Because that would be very interesting. I can't help but believe that Ruben Gallego would be a particularly interesting donation target for Democrats who either A, hated Kyrsten Sinema, who was a big, gigantic national figure. You got to imagine there's a lot of California money, a lot of New York City money that would come in, a lot of angry progressive money. But now Carrie Lake is somebody that can be a very attractive hood ornament to draw in money. I don't doubt that he's raising a ton from Arizona. But also, you know, I think he's probably playing nationally, at least in terms of fundraising. Certainly on the Democratic side, there has been a long and distinguished list of that, from the Stacey Abrams to the Beto O'Rourke's. You know, when Democrats find somebody that they would like to support, boy, does that Act Blue trigger finger start getting a little itchy. That's our update. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. If you want to get more content, two bonus episodes each and every week for the price of $3. Head on over there right now. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. We might be in the doldrums of spring in this particular presidential election, but we still do have some meaningful coalition building moves that are happening. And for that, we have to bring in our friend, Michael Cohen, the man who wrote the book on the modern political campaign. How you doing, buddy?
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Always, always, always. So part of the reason why I wanted to bring you on was because you have a big a Biden fundraiser that happens at the end of last week. And it seems to encompass a lot of where we are in this campaign. Because behind the scenes, $25 million raised, big glitzy images with Clinton, Obama, Biden, Stephen Colbert making a bunch of jokes, people packed in. You think, thumbs up. Behind the scenes, you have some more donor wrangling, specifically showing a commercial that has since come out where the Biden campaign is going to directly reach out to Haley voters, specifically by name. And then meanwhile, on the other side of the coin, you have the event interrupted repeatedly by protesters calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. And you have some particularly ugly clips of people being harassed outside, leaving the event that far crosses the line into anti-Semitism. So
I got their money's worth, everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What is the most interesting element of that from your perspective? Because to me, I see a campaign that is doing its best to try to reach out on both sides of its coalition, which it is going to have to do. But some of that might be harder than it would be in a quote unquote normal election.
Yeah, I think we have to dispense with the idea that any of these elections are going to be normal from now on.
Yeah.
I think we're in a situation now where we're post-normal. I don't know that we're post-modern, but we're certainly post-normal. And so I think what it comes down to is this, is that Biden is trying to run the same kind of play that he ran in 2020, you know, pull the Republicans over that he can pull over, keep the progressives in. But the problem right now is that they're even more bifurcated than they've been before. And so your progressives are really pissed off about Gaza. Some of them are very pissed off about other things. They're not getting what they want, even though Biden's been nudging it their way.
Yep.
And in fact, when he was heckled, he even said, hey, look, we've got to get help into Gaza. We've got to do a lot of things around that. So he's trying to give them something.
But it doesn't seem like the volume has been turned down.
No, it's not. I mean, he's doing his best to turn it down, but they're not listening. And I think that that's really what's coming down right now for Biden, is that people are not listening to him. They're not listening to him on the economy, that the economy is doing well. They're not listening to him on Gaza, where he's trying to thread the needle there. They're not listening to him on climate change, on a whole host of issues that, you know, Biden has really spent a lot of time on. The progressives are just not happy. And so they've essentially become the mirror image of the Freedom Caucus, and they become even more angry, if that's even possible. And so they're buying the tickets to go and embarrass him at fundraisers. They're going to follow him all the way around. I mean, we used to worry about this on campaigns where, you know, you'd have the opposite campaign come and film or disrupt, you know, your events. And now it's coming from inside the building. And so that's the real difference now between what a normal campaign looks like, what you expect, and right now what he's got going on. So there's only so much screening you can do, you know, before these kinds of events. If you pay, I mean, if you're paying online, you're going to show up, and there's only so much you can do. You can't control somebody's mouth. Right.
But, and these elements of the progressives, we had Annette Shenker Osorio on last Friday. She's And her point was, look, a lot of the people that are really pissed off right now, they're your door knockers. They're your drive people to the polls. Yeah. These are your active volunteers. So it's not like you can't screen for your most hardcore bedrock volunteers. Those are the people that you're inviting to these events.
Yeah, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Give them a questionnaire that says, what are you pissed off about? Gaza, you know, just go down the list. And, you know, I mean, you know, are you an anti-Semite? I mean, are you not an anti-Semite?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, are you mad about, you know, student loans? I mean, what are you mad about? Okay, well, we can't take these people. Okay, we now have like one dude.
Yeah, well, and that gets to the problem of trouble. You know, you would think a Radio City Music Hall event for which I believe the cheapest ticket was $250. This was and that was the nosebleeds, right? Like if you wanted to be anywhere close to see,
big bucks,
then that was thousands and thousands of dollars. And you saw people paying it just so they would be able to scream
just
from a
angry
point to get it picked up on mic. That's a fraying of the issue. Now, from your perspective, looking at that coalition,
right,
how much can Biden afford to bleed on the progressive end? Because obviously that is part of the audience that votes green. That is part of the audience that that aren't always reliable Democratic votes, but it would appear that they are necessary. How much leeway does Biden have with progressives?
Well, it's pretty clear it's getting smaller and smaller. I think with Biden at this point, he has to hope for external events to really help him, because he's got to worry about, you know, Rafah happening during Ramadan. That's going to be terrible, you know, visually for that. I mean, it might be very good for Israel long term. You could argue it both ways, you know, on the merits, but on the politics, which is what we do here, it's not great it's bad for Biden. And so what you have to hope is that it ends and then they take some of the steam out of it. So if I'm Biden, I'm having a conversation with Netanyahu, his current not best friend. He's saying to him, look, finish this thing.
Like, yes.
He's, you know, it's literally the Nikki Haley finish him, you know, kind of, you know, thing. And I think at that point, you have to really say to yourself, okay, if it's done, let's say in, you know, before the conventions, that's helpful, right? If it's done after the conventions, if it lingers, that's another thing. But Netanyahu is signaling that they're going to finish this up relatively quickly. And so that's really what everyone needs in the Democratic coalition right now, is that for this to go out and then for the steam to sort of come out of it. So where you have the Occupy Wall Street and all the other, you know, sort of waves of progressive discontent, you know, they eventually end, and or at least they dissipate to the point where it's not an everyday thing. And that's where it has to happen for Biden there, because that's the biggest flashpoint in the coalition right now. There's a lot of others. But what you really worry about is that if it doesn't dissipate, if, you know, this goes all the way through to November, then you're looking at Jill Stein. You're looking at a lot of different options for people in states where you can't afford it.
Yeah. And you know, if anybody who's spent a lot of time focused on the Middle East and specifically that region, especially when you're in these kinds of things, I don't think that anything really ends cleanly. You know, there might be a situation where it looks like the IDF is saying, all right, if we get this top guy, Sinwar, in Gaza, that'll be their mission accomplished moment. At that point, they start to pull back and you start. But also it's like, who fills that power vacuum in Gaza is a whole nother conversation that, you know, if you're Biden, you have no idea where it's going to land. It could be that America's eyes turn somewhere else and we have another issue that we're very, very focused on, or it could be a hot Gaza summer. And that's what people are focused on from now until November.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you, first of all, I mean, there's no great solutions in the Middle East, and we know that from being alive, right?
I'm sure that's written on a very old stone somewhere. There's no good solutions here.
There's no good solutions. It's always bad. So you have to get to the point where it's less bad, right? So right now it's really hot. And so you need to get it to, like, you know, warm. You know, if it's like, you know, 500 degrees now, you need to get it back down to like 120, you know? And so I think that's what you have to hope for if you're Biden, and what he's trying to do is, you know, helping to cool the temperature down, even if it's like incrementally. But what he really needs is he needs for Rafah to be over, for some mission accomplished thing, and then let Israel battle it out internally over whether Netanyahu goes tomorrow or 6 months from now.
Yes.
So that's really the biggest deal right now. Everything else is sort of garden variety, progressive angst. Mm-hmm. And that stuff is sort of baked in, right? And so that's really what's going on the Biden side. You know, it's good for him to get the money. He's out raising Trump, which is helpful.
Big time, yeah.
You know, even the congressional committees are out raising the Republican congressional committees, and that's a sign, right?
Well, with results like the Republican Congress currently, you know, how could you not? You know,
yeah, I know. I mean, when you have Chip Roy on the floor of the House going, "What can I say to my constituents?" I mean, literally speaking the quiet part out loud.
Yeah,
it's normally, and again, not a normal election, right? You're in a situation now where people are literally saying out loud, "What the fuck are we doing?"
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And so, right, and so it's not like everything is, you know, sunshine and rose petals over on the other side. You know, you still have the Nikki Haley people like me who will never vote for Trump. And I think I know you want to have that conversation.
Oh yeah. We're going to get there next.
There's plenty of others, you know, but certainly on the Democrat side, you know, they've got their positives, they're raising money, which is good. But the negatives is that they don't have the energy that they usually have. And they're going to have to spike that with negative ads and that kind of stuff. Cause it's not going to work for, "Hey, Joe is really nice. You like him." You know, not this time.
No. And steady hand on the wheel is not quite the same argument that it was in 2020, when things are kind of in chaos right now. That is the problem.
About this offline. Yeah. We were talking about this offline. I mean, between Gaza, the border,
Ukraine,
I mean, you can name like five
ships,
or six things.
Ships are running into bridges, planes, right, doors bridges. Are flying off. Like, you know, there's just a lot of crazy stuff that is in the air.
Right. NC State, you know, I mean,
exactly.
They're in the Final Four.
These brackets are busted.
Yep. Right. And I'm angry as a Biden voter. Right? It really fucked my bracket. Thanks a lot.
At least he was able to deliver a rematch of Iowa versus LSU on the women's side.
Yes.
So he should be touting that.
I accomplished that, you know.
let's swing over to the Nikki Haley side, because while there is this very loud element of the left that is screaming and yelling, at least the Biden brass are saying, "Well, you want to know what? There's a possible generational coalitional opportunity here." And we relied on Never Trump voters. They provided a lot of the difference in 2020. We cannot forget about that part of the coalition. Mm-hmm. And they seem to have their way in with Nikki Haley. They released a 30-second ad, mentioned specifically Never Trump several times.
Barred permanently.
How realistic do you think this courtship is? And if it is something that is effective, is this just one of those moments where things are going to, you know, kind of semi-permanently shift, that these voters are now Democrats?
Yeah, I think these are people who would identify as independents, but they are operationally Democrat at the highest level at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would imagine that what they will end up doing in many cases is splitting their tickets between a congressional or, you know, even lower races, but holding their nose and voting for Trump. And voting for Biden. And I think they understand that this is a very different election than normal, as we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And so I think that they eventually go and vote for Biden. The issue with those voters, though, and this is actually extremely important, is not whether or not they're going to come home to Trump, because they're not going to. It's whether or not they just stay home. And so those ads are really targeted at them to come out and vote, bank your vote, and put it away so you don't have to worry about this anymore. So I kind of think like those voters will be the first to vote absentee or early because they just want to be done with it. And I think that that's a lot of – it's going to sort of reinforce that feeling that, you know, these people voted for Biden probably in 2020. They might have voted for Trump in 2016, but they're certainly not going to do that again. And so they need a home, and they're not going to get one from No Labels. I mean, everyone and their mother has turned down No Labels.
I think when this airs, we will be a day away from their self-imposed deadline to find a candidate, and the roll call of those that have turned them down is fairly robust. Let's say.
Yeah, it is. I mean, even even Chris Christie took a good look at it and said, I don't want to reelect Trump. And I think he's sort of the avatar for the strategic minded voter, right? Who says, okay, who can I get away with voting for? And it's like, this time, I guess I can't. You know, there's no third party that's reasonable that I can vote for. I mean, we can end up with another situation where, like, you know, I mean, Gary Johnson votes, you know, runs again. I mean, it's the whole thing here is, from my perspective, is No Labels should have spent, and I would have advocated this to them if I had spoken to them about it. They were, by the way, former client of mine before they decided to go ahead and run a presidential election, which is probably not going to happen, to be honest with you. I mean, I met Joe Lieberman. He was a great guy. I met a lot of them over there. They were really deep thinkers. Galston over there had left because they decided to go ahead and run a presidential campaign. I mean, so there's been some sort of like, you know, breakup.
There's been some chaos. Yeah.
There's been a little bit of chaos there as well. Right. But I think that if they decide to go ahead and put someone on the ballot, it's not going to help anybody. It's going to help. Well, I mean, I guess it would help Trump. This is not going to help them long term. What they should have been doing over the past 4 years is getting ballot access, rolling that through, and then running campaigns at the lower level to start building a party from the bottom up, as opposed to from the top down. And I think that they're committed to the idea that somehow a presidential needs to change everything. But we've learned in, you know, 200 plus years of, you know, having America is that, you know, a third party really only works when it supplants another party. And that doesn't really work in this situation because it's not really, you know, an issue-based thing. It's really just sort of a personality thing. Like, we don't like these dudes. We want someone else.
You know? Yeah. Well, and realistically from, you know, the cheap seats where I am, the $250
cheap seats,
you know, Biden seats. Biden fundraiser seats,
it's cost me $5.
I don't know what you would be doing if you are let's say like Jeff Johns is somebody Jeff Duncan from Georgia that turned him down. Why would he burn all of it? He's a young guy. Why would he burn all of his bridges in Republican politics for one bite at the apple that is probably going to be rotten? Like, let's say it's going to get you a lot of attention. You're going to be on a lot of television shows for about 2 weeks. And then the kill squads on both sides will make sure that you're never on again. And then at that point, it's like, okay, so now you've burnt everything. So it would really have to be, I mean, let's be honest. This was the Joe Manchin slot. He is fine shredding everybody. He has no love for the Republicans. The Democrats had kicked him out. He was at the end of his career anyway. He wasn't going to need, he was ready to party on his party boat. And he turned it down.
He's a No Label. And importantly,
was a No Labels guy.
Right. Right. So I met him at those conventions and stuff, and he was totally committed. And he even realizes that if I
not going to happen
like Trump. Right. Yeah. So you end up with somebody who's probably crazy. And has no future. And so you're back with,
like, I've heard one name that, who knows? We'll throw it out there. I heard Yang, that Yang is the guy. And,
That's terrible.
And
I don't know. I mean, 1%.
This is scuttlebutt. Yeah. This is like secondhand.
No, I know.
Secondhand scuttlebutt. But I mean, we'll throw it out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's dumb too. I mean, he's a young guy and he can easily, be a commerce secretary or a treasury under.
Yeah, but he already burned his bridge. He already got upset with the Democratic Party and huffed out. So
yeah, I mean, but everyone's upset with everybody. So like, does that really matter? I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right. I mean, you know, I think the attention span right now for Pauls who are like welcoming people back are like, are you breathing? Do you have a voting card? Welcome back.
Welcome back. You know? Let's go.
Can you give me $5? I'm in. Cool. I mean, I really think that. And I think Trump has sort of set that bar, which is like, okay, you hate me. Rubio, Cruz, you know, just name the list. Mace.
And now
all of them.
McConnell.
Welcome home, guys.
Trump and McConnell are back on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah, ripping on his wife. I mean, it seems like that's the gateway to getting loyalty is to rip on someone's wife now, which is really bizarre.
Let me
I'm a man without a country.
Let me look at Nikki Haley as an avatar then. Sure. Because if the Biden campaign genuinely believes that she is the lever for which you can say, all right, all these voters that clung to her, they really do want to be Republicans, but they are absolutely disgusted by Trump. It is going to be something that would be very, very hard to swallow to the point where they might never do it. Then are we at like, hey, what do we need to do to make you night one speaker at the Democratic National Convention? Like, are we at that level? And then if you're on the other side, if you're on the Trump side, is there now renewed thought of like, hey, if we put her on the ticket as VP, there's a utility here that we can at least try to keep some of these people off the field?
Trump seems pretty committed to not wanting Haley voters.
So all the clips that Biden plays, that's primary talk, right? Which we all know
if Haley went out on April Fool's Day, even on April Fool's Day, and said, I support Trump, he would be, you know, very happy about it. And
yes.
It would probably be the funniest thing Haley ever did on April Fool's Day, but it's not happening today, right? I mean, the weirdest thing that we got on April Fool's Day so far is Dennis Kucinich running again as an independent candidate in Ohio 7, which is insane.
Amazing.
But sure.
What
okay,
a stud.
Great. Thank
what a
you.
Stud.
I'm looking for him to sort of land the joke at around 5 o'clock today.
Yeah.
Just in time for a Playbook PM or something. Yeah. But apparently he's running today, which is fantastic. But back to Haley. I mean, I think that's a bridge too far for Trump to go. I mean, I think that he will let other people do it. So, for example, if he picks a Tim Scott, Tim Scott could reliably say, you know, hey, look, you know, I'm a normie. I'm even getting married now. Air quotes on married.
Putting scare quotes, square quotes on married.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not scare quotes because I don't think it's scary. I think it's just kind of convenient. Right.
Okay. Yes. Ominous air quotes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't get on the ticket, I mean, does that thing survive the campaign? I mean, I don't know. I want happiness.
What about Cory Booker's relationship with Rosario Dawson? That unfortunately fizzled out as soon as he wasn't running for president.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, I guess you got the Star Wars thing. So maybe he was afraid of lightsabers or something. I don't know. Who knows? That was all kind of weird, but you know, fine. Okay. They went out on some kind of date, you know, that's nice too. Look, it's okay to be gay this time of the world. I mean, it really is. Like, if you are gay, it just is okay. I mean, so like, if it's
apropos of nothing, we come into the summer, we're getting close to Pride. Let's just say it's okay to be gay.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, just be who you are. I'd be more impressed if you just said he was. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's not. Maybe he is heterosexual and just really choosy. Maybe they both are.
It's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum, right? It's hard being a senator. You know, it's hard, you know, wondering whether or not they're really into you or into the cool office that you have that nobody wants. I mean, I don't know. I mean, who knows? Anyway, pointing on the Haley stuff, I really think Haley, first of all, let's just say it. And, you know, I have the button. I have the T-shirt.
Yes.
She was a bad candidate. She just was. Okay.
Bad campaign. I would say bad campaigning. Yeah.
Boring candidate.
Yeah.
Totally humorless.
Scared of its own shadow. That was my biggest thing with it, is that they were so concerned about the telltale hallmark of a campaign that is not going to succeed is that they're so focused on every weakness that they can never really accentuate their strengths. The Clinton campaign was a great example of it. Hillary's in 2016. And yeah. I think this is another, that was another one where it's like, they were so focused on like, don't screw up that they weren't thinking about how they were going to win.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, I mean, some of this is gender, right? I mean, you know, women yeah. who, you know, it's, there's a much lower bar for women, getting knocked out, particularly out of a top race like this. But I also think that, you know, and to see your point about, you know, Hillary, there is no central reason for Nikki Haley to run. Like there was, she's sort of like outside the mainstream of like what the Republicans were at that point.
Yeah.
There was no case that she made other than I'm pretty normal, you know, and yeah. I'm kind of boring. I'm an accountant. Well, I mean, normal and boring does not set people on fire. And no, you know, I mean, you know, it'll get you some money for a while because people really do want normal. At the
people like to say it in surveys. I want a boring right. person, but really, but it's not going to get you out yeah. of your house. You got to get people right. excited.
You want someone who's got fire, and you know, and any of the candidates that you've seen that have run over the past 20 to 30 years, the ones who have won have had fire, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Clinton had fire. I mean, you know, Trump fire. I mean, even Biden when he was running had fire. I mean, I think you sort of like,
well, Biden had a reason. And again, it's like,
yeah, he did.
So much of this is going to be really, really hard to model because, well, let me ask you this in general, how yeah. much do you take the priors of the 2020 election seriously? Cause I have aside from the very basics, we're a polarized country. It's going to come down to the five states that we know they're going to come down to. It's going to yeah. really be in the margins. Like it's been in the margins the last two elections. I don't know if I can really take a lot of priors from 2020. I don't know if we can take the vote share or the vote amount priors from 2020. Like, I don't think that we can take the issues as seriously. I don't even know if we can take the coalitions as seriously because everything was so bizarre. And yeah. you know, we had the economy that cosplayed as the Great Depression for like a month and a half. Everyone's terrified and depressed and scared. Like right. Crime was in a crazy position. We had just had these riots that were done for reasons that folks by polling found justified. So it's like I don't know if we can look at the 2020 election and compare it to the 2024 election. What do you think?
Okay. My take on this is that the 2024 election is a garden variety four-year election. Like okay. it has its set of issues. This is not if it weren't for these two candidates, if you just had generic yes. D, generic R, this would be a generic election. I mean, there's nothing going on that's existential. That is, you know, there's no major war. There's no pandemic. There's no major crisis other than issues, right? I mean, you know, there is a crisis on the border, right?
Yes.
But you know, every town is not feeling that, like the pandemic. You know, the pandemic, everyone felt that. A war, everyone will feel that, right? This is like localized issues, you know, going on. I mean, Baltimore, you know. Yeah. So to me, like there's an amalgamation of issues that would be standard fare in a lot of, you know, campaigns. The biggest difference, though, is that we got two dudes running against each other again.
Yes.
And so I think to a real extent, you have sort of built in loyalties to each of these candidates. But I don't think this is going to be a really strong issue-based campaign. I mean, other than abortion, which is the only thing that seems to be animating people
yeah.
on the left, and the border, which what animates them on the right, there are other, like these other issues like Gaza, but like Gaza might be solved, you know, within a few weeks. You know, there's other things like student loans. Well, I mean, Biden has done what he could on that, and that's pissing off certain people, but they're not going to not vote because of that.
No.
So I think this is more of a normal election than you would think. And so when you're looking at like some candidates like, you know, in Pennsylvania, I mean, they're nominating the right guy for the Senate if you're a Republican. I mean, they're nominating
McCormick,
the guy
yeah.
they should have McCormick. They should have nominated McCormick last time, you know, and so he gets it this time instead of Oz, right?
Yeah.
So like that becomes a very competitive race. And a race that McCormick can win. So I think this election is, you know, in a sense, not as normal as usual ones, right? Because of just the general crazy that we live with. But it's also much more normal because we don't have a pandemic. We don't have a major war. And so when those things are out, you know, the issue really becomes these two people. And so if you say to yourself, okay, Trump might end democracy. Okay.
Yes.
He might be the existential threat in this in this election as opposed to an issue. It's really the candidate, right? I mean, we know what Biden will do. We don't know how long Biden will live, but we know that what Biden will do if he stays alive, because we have this sort of 4-year normal battles between things. But if Trump gets reelected, then we end up in a situation where it is an existential thing. So that's my argument from the Nikki Haley supporter side. I mean, if you're a Trump person, you're like, well, look, everything was fine until the pandemic. What's your problem, dude? You know, see, I was crazy, but you know what? Life is crazy. And if you watch WWE, everything's crazy. If you watch Real Housewives, it's crazy. If you watch any kind of reality TV, it's crazy. So this guy, like, I mean, I watch crazy all the time. It's actually my entertainment. So, you know, I mean, I think if you're a Trump Republican, you're looking at it and going, I like what I had before the pandemic. Well, and the pandemic drops in, so they don't blame him for it.
You know, I did a big monologue on Friday about Biden bringing up COVID, and you would think that that the COVID thing is something that's hard to predict where it's going to land because it was so personal. It was that there's legit PTSD. There's a lot of anger, especially from parents, about what happened to their kids. They are looking at the fruits of what happened.
There is. There's a lot of anger.
You know, from those lockdowns. And so Biden bringing up COVID is something that's very dangerous, I think, because you never know really where it's going to land. But he kind of has to, because right now you're seeing in polling, Trump nostalgia is a for real problem for the Biden campaign. They need to put some dents in like, wait a minute, I had more money. Like they are right now, and who knows where we're going to land by November. But right now, I think they are losing the are you better now than you were 4 years ago argument, which is usually what we look at as the big barometer.
They are, which is why it seems every day that their social media is like, you know, ripping, you know, showing clips of Trump every day, like handling, you know, asking about, you know, can we inject it into our bodies? That kind of stuff. I mean, you know, so they're reminding you of how crazy it was, that it wasn't just a pandemic, but it was also presidentially assisted pandemic, right? And
yes.
So it was very different, right? You know, it wasn't just that we had a pandemic and we had all these problems related to it. It was also that Trump made it worse, right? And when he was tested, things were worse. And when he left, things got better, right?
Yes.
And so you have to do that, right? At some level. But, you know, that again, like, you know, I'm a big fan of not online, right? So you and I teach digital strategy. So, you know, it doesn't reflect what people really believe in their lives. They think, okay, well, 4 years ago, yeah, the pandemic, whatever. But, you know, 4 years ago, I had more money in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a war in the Middle East. You know, we didn't get embarrassed in Afghanistan.
Russia hadn't invaded Ukraine.
Russia hadn't invaded Ukraine because they were worried about Trump because he's so crazy. Like that kind of crazy worked for us because he kept Putin in check. You know, you weren't having these kinds of things where we were being tested overseas. They just think that, you know, they assign Biden as weak because those things are going on, not because those other countries just went crazy, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the problem, right? And so that kind of nostalgia is real. And, you know, how you handle that is what they're trying to do. But, you know, we get into the fall campaign, you'll start seeing a lot more ads about showing, you know, the greatest hits from Trump because every day there was something.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wonder.
I don't know if it'll work.
Yeah. Well, because part of it's old news. Part of it is everybody knew what happened. But also, I don't know. Right. What the
but
mood.
We survived it, right?
Yeah, well, it's like
that's the thing. Like, you know, we survived it. Does that mean we're
well?
Okay?
That's the other thing. No. Is it's like who really wants to own their decisions during the pandemic? Honestly, because I know Democrats don't want to own lockdowns. Democrats don't want to own school closures. They want to say, Trump. But like that's really what they were pushing Trump to do. When they say that Trump mishandled the pandemic, it was you should have locked down harder and you should have closed schools earlier. Like stuff that are now broadly unpopular. And then on the other side,
well, not only that, but the research came out and said that the lockdowns were bad. You know, I mean, so it's not even supported by the science.
And meanwhile, the Republicans, they don't. Trump doesn't want to own Operation Warp Speed. Trump doesn't want to own the vaccine.
Right, because he loses 10% of his coalition. Over
exactly.
That.
Although I don't know whether or not that's going to be a thing. Now, look, the anti-vaccine crowd is not going to vote for Biden. So, you know, he can probably tell.
No, but they just won't vote. It's the same problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, will they vote versus voting for Trump, right? And if they don't vote, that helps Biden, right?
Yeah,
or but they end up somewhere with, you know, RFK Jr.
I would say that the coalitional problems for the Republicans are more on size than they are on the borders of the coalition elements. Like, there are people online that were DeSantis people that still take shots at Trump. They're going to vote for Trump in the fall. Like, they are going.
They all are.
Yeah, they're all going to vote for him. There are elements of, again, the fringe right that's more of the anti-vax kind of stuff, maybe RFK, but he's also leaned more left, more environmental left. So it's like, I imagine they're all going to vote for Trump. And where the question with them is, do you have the numbers? You've got the groups. There's not everybody's kind of, except for the Never Trump crowd, have kind of loaded up for Bear. They're going to go for Trump. That's that. The question is there enough of them in the ways that the Democrats?
Right, so Justin, you know where this ends up?
Where?
It all comes down to turnout.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course. Right? Of course.
That's what this is, right? Yeah, it all comes down to turnout.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea here is, more than anything else, you know, can Trump get his people out? You know, or are they just not going to vote, right? Same thing with Biden. You know, do those progs who are pissed off just not vote and just say pox on everybody, you know, or do they write in, you know, in Michigan, none of the above because they think that's really cool. So this, you know, right. You know, or do the Republicans write in like Dick Cheney or something? And I mean, this, you end up in a situation, or Liz, you know.
Well, I mean, here's the biggest in-kind donation that could be made to the Democratic cause and for Biden 2024 is, and you know, there was a bunch of conversation on this on the right last week that you have people that are getting a lot of money, like Turning Point Action out here, continuing to talk about how Republicans shouldn't be doing vote by mail and should be doing a vote day of election, which it's like,
it's insane.
It's the reason why Arizona has two blue senators and a blue governor.
Right.
It's the reason why Nevada is in play. The old people in sunbaked states vote early. If you don't want them to vote early, you are asking the opposition party to have a chance. Like, this is insane to me that this is still a thing that is talked about on the right. And if I were Democrats, I would be elevating these voices in every way possible.
Yeah. If I was Democrats, I'd have a day one campaign. And the day one campaign is the day that voting opens in your state. And I want to bank every single vote I can. Bank them all and say, you know what? You're right. You're right. Democrats vote early. We're smart. Let's do this. I don't understand. I mean, when I ran campaigns in Florida as a Republican, I mean, we had a very serious strategy on how to bank those votes. I mean, it was just like so elementary. It was like, you know, somehow being like against running television ads. Like, you would never do that. Like, somehow being against knocking on doors. Like, you'd never do that. Like, all of a sudden, you're just not going to go ahead and vote this way because you don't like it. Well, I mean, that's so weird. I mean, Trump needs to really like get off of that somehow.
And
he's, you know, he's nimble enough that he could do it. But Trump can say, in these states, we've passed new laws and it's safer now than ever to vote by mail. I'm for vote by mail. I don't know if he can pull that off.
I think, but, yeah, I mean, Trump.
Why not?
Trump
why not?
Can. And he's been better about it, although he's prone to lapses of talking about gigantic mass fraud. The issue is whether or not there's going to be significant money, especially when money is going to be a challenge on the right from their perspective to figure out. I mean, these get out the vote drives again. You have to build them from the ground up. And if you're not thinking about early voting and you're only thinking about day of, it's a totally different strategy. You have to order.
It costs so much more day of than vote early. I mean, that's the problem, right? I mean, if you're cash strapped, it costs so much more money to get people out because you've got to deputize people to go and drive people. You've got to call those people. You've got to make sure they're ready. You know, that they need to be picked up at 11:15 because they got to go to work. You're back to work at noon. I mean, you know, this kind of stuff is very people intensive and money intensive. Whereas vote by mail is really easy. I mean, it's legitimately easy. Like you can now point click, get something in the mail. You're done. You've banked that vote.
There we go.
And then you can go ahead and follow up with that person. It's like one text from somebody, you know, and you're done, as opposed to like getting somebody out that day. That is really hard. yeah, that's a logistical problem. And even though Amazon's really good at, you know, that kind of stuff, that's one company, right? The rest of the companies are really bad on it, and so are campaigns. Campaigns really have a hard time with that because it costs so much money and people.
I'm going to get these numbers wrong, but they're directionally correct. But on the Ruthless podcast last week, they pointed out that in 2016, Republicans had a vote by mail advantage of like 10,000 or something, but like, you know, a 5-digit lead. 2020, they were down like 160,000 votes by the time that election day came around, and they made it close. But it's like, all you have to do is not get blown out by 160,000 votes in Arizona, and you can have a shot at winning that state. This is bonkers to me.
This is the self-destruction of Donald Trump that he has gone through his entire career, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a real estate developer, and he goes too far over his skis and he loses money. You know, I read somewhere that like if he had just put the money in the bank and like invested in the S&P, he'd make more money than all the crazy that he's done trying to sell all these kinds of different things, including Bibles, which is insane.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Now it's saying that the browser ran out of memory. All right. This is
I've got recording.
Yeah, no, this is
on your side.
Yeah, this is, well, normally this program, this website is fucking rock solid for me. So, this is the first time.
I blame Biden.
I want to record in multiple studios. Okay. All right. You want to know what? We will just do a quick wrap up. I'm going to assume that it is recording somewhere and we will find something. Thank you very much, Michael Cohen, the man who wrote the book on the modern political campaign. Where can people find more of you?
You can find me on Threads at Michael Cohen, or you can find me at michaelcohen.us. And thank you for having me. I always appreciate being on. You run a great show here, buddy.
And you are out for vacation. You're going to España, right?
I'm going to España. I've studied Spanish since I was a kid. I was like 10 years old and somewhere in middle school. And since then, I've always wanted to go, and I haven't gone. And this would be the first time I spent any time there. The only time that I spent like one night in Barcelona, which I can't talk about here, but let's just say that we did focus groups with a client, and the client took me out afterwards.
Gotcha.
And the next morning really was painful. So I'm going with my wife this time. So I have adult supervision, and I know it's going to be great. Can't wait to do it. 2 weeks from now, I'll come back and more than happy to talk to you about the Dennis Kucinich campaign.
Yes. Indeed. Indeed, we will. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
And that'll wrap it up for us today. Politics, 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 written and hosted by me, Justin Robert Young, for Dog and Pony Show Audio in Austin, Texas. If you want to thank our boy, Michael Cohen. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty. I don't know if you guys could hear it. Hopefully, it wasn't too bad. But thank Mr. Cohen for coming on the show, talking the X's and O's. You know we always love to have him on. Letter P, letter X, number3guest.com. If you want to thank him personally, that'll lead you to his Twitter. If you want to email me, it is theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Again, theyoungamerican@gmail.com. You can follow, find, and share video clips of the show on TikTok for now. Justin R. Young, Instagram, Justin R. Young, YouTube, Politics, Politics, Politics. On Twitter, we are PX3Tweets and Justin R. Young. And you can find this podcast and share it with your friends, family, and clergy. PX3Podcast.com. We don't have any gigantic network support. Don't know if you guys have picked up on that. I got my own production company, and that's it. Friends, we got a bindle and a banjo, and we are going homeward bound until we find the truth. And that means that we are dependent on your generosity. So if you would like to give me a one-time donation, just a little attaboy, little dollar, $5, just to say thank you. I appreciate that. I've gotten value from your product. Well, you can do so. PayPal.me/payjury. We all got a PayPal with a few extra bucks in it. Venmo money isn't even real. We all know that. Justin-Young-20. Our Cash App is PX3Cash, and you can send me anything you'd like in the mail. P.O. Box 153184, Austin, Texas, 78715. Again, that is Post Office Box 153184, Austin, Texas, 78715. Of course, you can always get our bonus content at TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Our $3 tier gets you 2 bonus podcasts per week covering all the news that we miss on our free podcasting schedule. And our $10 tier gets your name right at the end of the show like these fine folks on our Titanic. $10 tier. Sam, John, Niemeister, Edwin, and Vote Gloria Young for King of the New World Order. Brian, Edison, Jeremy, A Dog Named Checker, Sarah Genie, Spider, Matthew, Dr. G, Dustin, Brad, D Laser, Nick, Just Another Pilot, Middle Aged Mike, Utah Jimmy Montana, The Jen, Alo, D Really, Andrew, Lisa, Fat Tony's PJs from New York, Devon the CFP, Gloria, Gray Zone, Peepaw, Jay, Neil, John, DP4 Bongo, Neil, His Nerdiness, Charles, Audrey Stole Adler's Spot, Darren, Idris, Berkeley, Steven, Nomadic Terran, Molly's Delightful Demeanor, Adam, Chief Andy, Robert, Casey, Paul, and that'll wrap it up. If you want to join them for this, the dog days, the trenches of our cycle, friends, there's only one place to do it. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. That'll wrap it up for us today. On Friday, the next free episode of the show, we will be back with a great conversation about the internet, politics, and strategy. It is with a supremely interesting and talented writer, Sasha Eisenberg. He's got a new book out called The Lie Detective, all about misinformation and disinformation in politics. And if that is something that you might think is one way, trust me, it's a great conversation. You're going to really, really love it. But till then, this is your old pal, Justin Robert Young, saying some shows talk about politics, others talk about politics, and still more discuss politics. But this is the only show that dares discuss. Oh!
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.